It's time now on WSON for Speak Up. Speak Up is WSON's award-winning public affairs program. We invite your calls this morning with questions or comments at 826-3923. Now, let's find out what everyone's talking about.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our Speak Up program. Starting off a brand new week, this last full week of October. How about that? Moving right along. And today, we're at the 24th of October, the 297th day of the year. 68 days are left, and you can tell it's going to be fall-like out there. Everyone's got their heavier jackets on today, I think, right, Don?
Yes.
You're not going to do that to me, are you?
What's that? Not talk?
Not talk, yeah. Oh, okay. You've never known Don Watson not to talk.
That's not good.
Might want to bring your microphone just a little bit closer.
Oh, yeah, that's what it is. Yeah. I was talking, you just couldn't hear it.
Couldn't hear it, just right. But Don, of course, is director of our Henderson County Public Library. Good to have you back.
Good to be back.
Glad this worked out. This is my last open date for the month, and kind of was wondering what was going to happen, but you called last week to remind us of the Friends of the Library, and they have their annual meeting on the 27th, don't they?
Yes, Thursday night, 7 p.m., the Presbyterian Church Fellowship Hall, right across from the library at the corner of Washington and Main Street.
And we've got something really special lined up this year, don't we?
We do indeed. A really fine local author who's done a really, really, really neat, well-researched, well-documented, well-written book about an event that happened in Henderson and Newburgh in July of 1862, perpetrated by a native Hendersonian who went on to fame and perhaps fortune in Texas. We have just been talking this morning. There is at least one resident of Henderson, lifelong resident of Henderson, who is a direct descendant of Adam Rankin Johnson.
Is that right?
Yes.
Can we say who that is?
Well, I guess we can reveal that. I don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
You know Jim Bates.
Absolutely.
Well, James J. Bates, Jr., a former bank executive.
Mm-hmm. Just right across the street from us.
Former sports announcer here at WSON. He was telling me last Thursday at our library board meeting, he's the president of the library board, he was telling me that his great-grandfather was Adam Johnson's brother.
How about that?
And he served in the Union Cavalry, was an officer in the Union Cavalry, and still has his cavalry sword.
Wow.
Jim does.
That's super.
It's quite interesting, and I thought, I was really surprised, and Ray was telling me this morning that he did not know of any local descendants of Stovepipe Johnson.
Actually, it seems to happen that way. A lot of times authors will find research just because of what they've already written, and then others will come forward, well, you should have talked to me because I could have told you this and that and the other. But, you know, maybe that'll be basis for a sequel or something, right, Ray?
Yes, thank goodness for revised editions.
There you go. And we're very pleased to have Ray Molesky with us this morning, the author of this new book, Thunder from a Clear Sky. And good morning to you, sir.
Thank you. Great to be here.
It's good to have you in our area. You actually taking time away from your job over across the river at Bristol-Myers?
Yes.
And what do you do there?
I'm in the quality assurance department as a investigator. I investigate problems, write reports. I'm a technical writer, really.
Okay. Now, where are you from originally?
Originally from Long Island, New York. And I moved to Evansville, Indiana in 1986 when Bristol-Myers relocated their plant there. And I've been in Evansville ever since. Met my wife, had my family all here in the Midwest.
Super. And so you plan to hopefully stay here unless another corporate move comes along?
I plan to stay here if at all possible. Super. Believe me, I've hit it just right in life.
Well, super. This probably seems a bit tropical at times compared to Long Island.
Yeah, it does.
Unfortunately, New York's about to get slammed by Wilma after she gets through with Florida, right?
Yes. It won't be the first time. I can remember Hurricane Bill in 1974 passed right over Long Island.
Is that right? Wow. Yeah. Okay. Well, we're here again to take your calls and questions. 826-3923 is our phone number, and certainly we invite you to come out and meet Ray in person, as he'll be talking about the book, and I'm sure signing a few autographs, signing a few books there at the Friends of the Library presentation this Thursday. But we thought it'd be a great idea to have him here this morning just to kind of give us an overview. And I wanted to ask the question of where you now, is this your first book?
Yes.
Okay, so first-time author, and,
yes.
You know, they say there's a book inside of all of us.
Yes.
Do you feel like that's the case?
I think it is. I think the difference was is that I actually pressed the button and sent in the manuscript, and it was a scary experience to finally jump over the bridge from a dream to the realization of that dream. And I can't tell you how many fantastic things have happened to me as a result of it, but I have to tell you, I was deathly afraid to do it at first.
Mm-hmm. Did you have some support from not only your family, but your coworkers?
Well, yeah, I had advisors who advised me, and of course I had the folks here in the Henderson County Historical Society, the Newburgh History Club. I had Professor Randy Mills in Oakwood City University, Indiana, who was my professional technical advisor on the book. And I had a lot of people who had helped me research the book, who really supported me and urged me on.
Mm-hmm. My question to Don was, and then he said, well, ask Ray when he gets here Monday morning, where did you get the idea for doing a book on Adam Rankin Johnson?
I didn't. I tell everybody that I know that I didn't want to write this book. I had to write the book. I was actually doing research for my wife's great-great-grandfather, who was a member of the 80th Indiana Infantry, and we have 90 letters that he had sent home from the battlefields. And that was originally the book I was trying to do. And then I started looking into his origins of enlistment. Why did he enlist in the summer of 1862 rather than 61 or some other time? And it turns out this Newburgh Raid was one of the reasons why recruitment went through the roof in southern Indiana in the summer of 1862. And my wife's great-great-grandfather was the man who got carried away with the reaction to the raid. As I tell a lot of people, Adam Johnson put just as many, if not more, people in Union blue than he did in Confederate gray. And the Newburgh Raid was certainly one of the reasons he did that. So I tripped over the story. I didn't really know very much about it. And I had no idea what the story was going to be about. And I had wanted to write my whole life long. And there was a terrific story. And I went into the Newburgh Library. And I asked the librarian, where's the book on the Newburgh Raid? I need to learn about this to further my research on this other book I was working for. And she said there was no book on the Newburgh Raid. And that kind of floored me. 143 years had gone by. It's really one of the historic signposts that Newburgh hangs its heritage on. And nobody had ever taken the time to write about it. And after some initial research, I said there's enough new sources and enough good sources that a book can be done on it.
Mm-hmm.
Then I decided to do it.
Okay, and it's called Thunder from a Clear Sky. I think that's a very appropriate title, don't you, Don?
Well, yes, it was certainly a surprise raid. I'm sure they were all. Those Hoosiers were surprised, I know, with one exception.
Yes.
The traitor.
Yes.
The man who gave Johnson the information wasn't surprised, but it was quite a shock. And it's such a great story. I mean, literally, there's tremendous cunning and just daredevil almost tactics, murder, revenge. I mean, it's a great story.
It has all the base elements of human endeavor, I can tell you. Mm-hmm. But the book title, by the way, actually was taken from a daily Evansville Journal article, July 26, 1862. And it was the Evansville newspaper's way of describing the raid.
Mm-hmm.
And they described it as our people were startled as by a clap of thunder from a clear sky. And that's how the raid was characterized. But I think the point that the book makes is that if people in southern Indiana were paying attention, it shouldn't have been so.
Mm-hmm.
But human beings, being the way they are, basically were taken by surprise.
Well, and again, if folks want to join in, feel free to give us a call, 826-3923. Kentucky itself is not considered a quote-unquote Civil War state, not like your Carolinas and states to the south where most of the major battles took place, Gettysburg, things like that. There were skirmishes, of course. The Battle of Sacramento is recreated now every year.
Adam Johnson was there.
Mm-hmm.
He was there. It was his first contact with the Union soldiers.
But, you know, Kentucky was kind of that buffer state, it seemed like, between the north and the south, so I could almost see where maybe folks in Indiana felt a bit removed from the war, but you would think right here along the border on the Ohio River, where we had patrols and certainly we had troops stationed on both sides, you would think that tensions were, or, you know, people would be more I don't know, on alert or astute to, you know, the possibility.
Well, they were in Henderson. I mean, tensions were very high in Henderson between those who were Confederate sympathizers and those who supported the Union. And there were a lot of what we would call crimes or terrorism. Mm-hmm. I guess actually the modern term would be terrorism. Many people called Johnson a guerrilla, which he did not like. He preferred the term partisan, I believe.
Yes.
But, I mean, their tensions were very high. I mean, there were people killed in the streets of Henderson.
Mm-hmm.
People hung down on the river at Audubon Mill Park. A relative of mine was shot on South Green Street. His name was Wathan. He came in from Union County to turn himself in and swear allegiance to the United States. On the way out, he and his brother were accosted by Union troops, and we don't mm-hmm. know exactly what happened, but he ended up dead.
Oh no!
So their tensions were very high.
Yeah, a lot of civil strife.
Yeah, we were titled a neutral state, but in fact, it just meant we never actually declared one side or the other. In fact, we were at war almost within amongst ourselves.
A lot of people don't know that there was at least three times the amount of Union soldiers from Kentucky as there were Confederate. It was really the best way to describe it is a Union state that wanted to maintain slavery, I mm-hmm. think, and which made it a very kind of a odd duck. But there was a lot of civil strife, and of course there were active Confederate and Union units operating in Kentucky throughout the entire war. And of course the Battle of Perryville, Kentucky, was one of the largest and really decided the fate of Kentucky in the mm-hmm. war. And perhaps the war. Some historians are now saying that the Battle of Perryville was probably one of the most important battles, one of the most undersold analysis, in that it could have actually swung the entire war.
Okay. Again, 826-3923 is our phone number, and I'm sure you get more in depth into the actual raid on Newburgh and how that was carried out, but maybe more importantly, why it was carried out.
Yes. Well, Adam Johnson came to Western Kentucky in this June of 1862, and he had orders from John Breckinridge to form a Confederate cavalry regiment from Union-held Western Kentucky. This was not an easy job. So after trying to essentially go door-to-door, he decided the way to do it was to engage in attacks on Union garrisons throughout Western Kentucky, and he attacked a Union garrison of over 100 soldiers here in Henderson, and got the publicity to bring recruits in from across the countryside, and that's what he did. But when the recruits came in, they were completely unarmed. And so Johnson, once he had the recruits in hand, had to get arms for them. And in order to stand up to the well-equipped Union soldiers in the field, he needed real weapons, not the generational shotguns or squirrel guns that a lot of the recruits were toting. And that's when he learned about the idle armory on the riverfront at Newburgh. He actually learned about it from a Newburgh citizen with Kentucky roots.
Yeah, and that building is still there, I think, today, or
no,
not?
No, it is not there.
Oh, okay.
The Union Bethel warehouse is not there. What is there is the former Exchange Hotel, which was the Union Hospital, where Adam Johnson actually showed down a number mm-hmm. of Union troops who were getting ready to arm and actually thwart the raid when he burst in with his shotgun and basically told them to put their arms down. Now, the soldiers at that time were commanded by a doctor because they were all convalescents, and the doctor ordered them to put their arms down and put themselves at Johnson's disposal, and he did that, and they did that, and he then proceeded to write out paroles for all of them.
How about that?
Yeah, he spent the afternoon writing out paroles for the soldiers there.
At that time, he had no commission.
He had no commission until August. He was kind of in a no man's land where he was trying to recruit a regiment, but until he had enough people to call himself, to call what he had a regiment, he was in the process of forming a unit.
Mm-hmm.
So the day of the raid, he did not have a commission. His commission was not official until the following month. But of course, that was all semantics to the people of Newburgh.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he got away with.
It might not have been if he'd been caught.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
It would have been so easy. You know, I often think how easy it would have been for somebody to pull out a pistol and put it in his stomach that day and pull the trigger. But he had many lives. He was a man who could have been killed at least a dozen times in his life. He just had that kind of luck and that kind of mm-hmm. gall and daring.
Yeah, really. I mean, it really took somebody that had, I don't know, a lot of guts, but then maybe not a lot of brains to pull off some of the things that...
Well, he had both.
He was pretty smart, though.
The bottom line was is that he was a man that really didn't worry about his personal physical safety. Mm-hmm. He never worried about his personal physical safety, which really made him a leader. He was always willing to go out front first in the most dangerous situations. This enabled him to bring men to his side mm-hmm. very easily, because he wasn't the type of general who was going to sit on a horse in back of the battle. He was always out front first. And, you know, when he led his 27 men across there, he took the most active part. And that's why mm-hmm. it was so easy for people to follow him.
That must have had a lot of charisma.
A lot of charisma. You know, I tell people that he called people throughout Western Kentucky, the whole Pennyroyal corridor. He recruited from Sebree, Niagara, Madisonville, all throughout there, and Slaughter's. But he's still calling people to him today.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm witness to the fact that even today, you know, almost a century after his death, he's still the type of person who did things that can call people to him.
That's what you're going to hear more about Thursday night. It starts 7 o'clock in the Fellowship Hall of Presbyterian Church. It's the featured program for the Friends Annual Meeting. And we've had a number of great local artists in recent years, haven't we, Don?
Well, I think we've had some good speakers in the past. Mm-hmm. Yes, very good. Last year we had Judge Bill Cunningham from the Lakes area.
Mm-hmm.
He's a judge down there, but he's written several books. And then we, gosh, Gail King has spoken, mm-hmm. Marianne Walker. We've had a number of good speakers.
I remember the gentleman from Evansville.
Mike Wicker.
Yeah.
Yes, that was, in fact, that was 2 years.
I think you're right. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So, goes to show we've got a lot of great talent here and got a lot of great stories still to tell and are left to be told out there, right?
Very much so. Very much so.
You know, you were talking about Adam Rankin Stovepipe Johnson. He was born in Henderson and lived here till what, maybe 18 or 19 or something?
Till he was 20.
20. And then he went to Texas. And it was from Texas that he, you know, became associated with the Confederacy. And during the war, we were talking about what a remarkable person he was. During the war, he was blinded. He became a general, and he was blinded, a casualty of the war. And but when he went back to Texas, he founded a town, became a... the disability did not mm-hmm. affect him, apparently, at all.
No, as a matter of fact, he tried to hide it from people as much as possible. He would wear a pair of dark glasses, and there are several stories about him. Well, for example, he would sit out on the front porch of his home with a shotgun in his lap, and if any, you know, there were any Indian attacks or whatever, that he would just raise his gun and look like he was defending, mm-hmm. but they didn't know that he was blind, you know. Or there's another story about how people would come into his land office, and he knew all the locations on the map, and he would point to various locations on the map while he was talking to them about what type of property they wanted to buy, and he would point right to it, and the person would leave. They would never know he was blind, and he never asked for an inch for it, and really never paid much attention to it. It didn't slow him down one wicket. Whatever hurdle he had to jump in mm-hmm. life, he jumped it and more.
Well, okay, you've written the book. What about the screenplay? This would make a great movie.
It would, and I've had somebody point out to me that the book is actually written almost like a screenplay, in the sense that most screenplays have to be broken into three pieces,
mm-hmm.
And each page of script has to be about 1 minute of screen time, and the book is about 100 pages. So it wouldn't take a lot to do. But again, you know, my cause is for historic preservation in Kentucky and Indiana. And whatever comes to the book, either now or after I'm gone, all of the profits are going to go to that cause. That's been my dream my whole life.
Okay. And it's in hardcover and softcover,
yes,
which is neat.
Yes, it is.
And it is published by...
iUniverse.
iUniverse?
Yes.
I don't know that I've heard of them before. Are they
new publisher.
Okay. Very good. But it looks like they did a super job. We've got some photographs in there. We've got some illustrations. It looks like it would be maybe... You know, if you're a fast reader like my wife, she could probably go through this in about two or three nights.
Yes.
But for a leisurely reader like myself, probably about a week.
Yes.
So.
And there's a lot of reference materials in the back, too. Mm-hmm. There's a timeline, and then there's some profiles on some of the noteworthy characters in the story.
Now, is your wife's You said it was great-grandfather?
Great-great-grandfather.
Great-great-grandfather. Are some of his letters in here?
No.
Okay.
No, this whole story is separate from...
It just kind of grew out of that.
Yes, I tripped over it, trying to find out why he enlisted.
Okay, very good. So, Ray, it's a pleasure meeting you. What's your next book going to be about?
Well, I'm hoping to return to the original project that I had of my with my wife's great-great-grandfather, but I've got to tell you, the more I learn about Adam Johnson, the more I think that America really needs to be fully reintroduced to this incredible Henderson native.
Okay. Well, very, very good. We look forward to that. We'll do that again maybe, who knows, this time next year.
Who knows?
Now, how long did it take to write this?
3 years in the research and the writing.
Okay. Which isn't bad.
It's not bad. It's a small book. It's only 176 pages, but most of that time was the research. The writing was a joy.
Good. Yeah, I think once you've gotten all the notes and things like that, the rest of it is more or less maybe condensing, keeping it from getting too long.
Yes. Yes, so. As a matter of fact, I did cut out quite a bit in the last draft in order to make it easy for people. I didn't want to make an intimidating 400-page book.
Okay, and I'm sure it's in our library now, right, Don?
Oh, yes.
So, come on.
And will be for sale Thursday night, of course, in hardback and paperback, and I believe the Historical Society still has copies, and it's at Barnes & Noble as well.
Yeah, you're going to be doing some book signings there before long?
Yes, I'm actually all over the place. I'm going to be in Indianapolis with the Indiana Historical Society on December 4th. I'll be doing a signing in Madisonville with some of the modern-day relatives of one of the characters who are in Madisonville on December 3rd.
Super. All right. Well, that's going to have to wrap it up. We went a little long because we got into it late, but thank you, gentlemen, both. And appreciate you coming in this morning and kicking off our Speak Up for this week.
Thank you so much.
Take care. And that's going to have to wrap it up.